I too have felt the load I bore in a too strong emotion sway. I too have wished no woman more this starting feverish heart away. I too have longed for trenchant force and will like a dividing spear, have praised the keen unscrupulous course which knows no doubt, which feels no fear. But in the world I learnt, what there thou too will surely one day prove, that will, that energy, though rare, are yet far, far less rare than love.
The French Lieutenant's Woman by John Fowles. Dramatized by Frederick Bradnam. With Amanda Redman as Sarah Woodruff, David Threlfall as Charles Smithson, and Norman Rodway as the writer. Episode 2.
On an early April day, Charles thought he had spied Sarah Woodruff in the wilderness of the Undercliff, standing obliquely in the shadows at the tunnel of ivy's far end. She, though, had already seen him climbing up through the ash trees, seen him pause before going into the dark green shade and look round nefariously to be sure that no one saw him. She did not turn to him until he was close.
Mr. Smithson?
Miss Woodruff, you are here already.
I have found another sea urchin. Here.
Well, you must allow me to pay you what I'd pay at the lime shop.
No. They are all I have to give.
There is no reason why you should give me anything.
Because you have come.
Miss Woodruff, I still do not understand why you should have so honored me. But I will listen.
I know a secluded place nearby. I will show you the way.
She walked lightly and surely, her skirt gathered up a few inches by one hand. Charles noted the darns in the heels of her black stockings, the worn-down backs of her shoes. Laboring behind her, he glimpsed the white ribboned bottoms of her pantalettes, which came down to just above her ankles. Her secluded place was a little south-facing dell. There was a great, flat-topped block of flint against a thorn tree's stem, making it a rustic throne that commanded a magnificent view of the treetops below and the sea beyond them.
You have a genius for finding eyries.
For finding solitude. That flint, I am sure, is your chair. I will sit here.
Miss Woodruff, will you not face me?
I prefer to tell you my story in this way.
Well, I have a fine view from here, and not only of your back. I promise not to be too severe a judge, Miss Woodruff.
His name was Varghese. He was brought to Captain Talbot's, where I was employed as a governess after the wreck of his ship. Has this been told you?
Some of the circumstances, yes.
The first thing I admired in him was his courage. I did not know then that men can be both brave and false. His wound was dreadful, his flesh torn from his hip to his knee. He was in great pain for days at first, yet he never so much as made the smallest groan.
He spoke no English?
A few words only. I speak some French, that was why I was with him. He told me about himself. He said he was first officer on his ship. And all he said was false. I don't know who he really was. He seemed a gentleman, but my French was not good enough to be sure. Sometimes, I think he was the devil in the guise of a sailor.
I am following. Please do continue.
He was very handsome. No man had ever paid me the kind of attention that he did. I speak of when he was mending. He told me foolish things about myself. He said he was surprised that I wasn't married. He flattered and lied.
You made advances, in short.
Yes, but, Mr. Smithson, we spoke in French, and perhaps what we said did not seem real to me because of that. I have had little experience of speaking the language. Sometimes he would mock me and call me cruel when I would not let him kiss my hand. day came when I thought myself cruel also.
And you were no longer cruel?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, I do understand, Miss Woodruff.
Can you understand? I'm sorry. But you cannot know because you are not a woman who was born to be a farmer's wife, but educated to be something better.
Well, what can I say?
You were not born a woman with a love of the intellect, beauty, learning. These are things my heart craves for. Perhaps I have no right to desire them. But I do.
You have every right.
Vargen recovered. The time came when he was preparing to leave. By then, he had declared his attachment to me.
Did he ask you to marry him?
No. There was only talk of marriage if I went back to France with him. He said he was to be promoted to ship's captain. But it was all false.
And did you tell anyone of all this?
No. I knew what advice I would be given. Vargen became more insistent. He said his whole happiness depended on my going to France with him, and my happiness also. I have not had a happy life, Mr. Smithson. And I had told him some of it. How my father had died in a lunatic asylum, how I was alone in the world without means. And how I had always felt myself to be condemned to solitude.
Why condemned to solitude?
My father was declared bankrupt, so all our possessions were sold. Ever since, I have suffered from the illusion that even objects such as chairs, tables, mirrors, all furniture conspire to increase my solitude. It is as if they say, you will never own us. We shall never be yours. This is madness, is it not?
But you are not mad, Miss Woodruff.
Vargen left for Weymouth, there to take the packet to France. He said he would wait 1 week for me. He could wait no longer. I told him I would never follow him, but as one day passed and then another, the sense of solitude swept back over me. I was overcome by despair. On the fifth day...
Did this Frenchman tell anyone in Lyme that he wanted you to marry him?
No. No one. He had a good excuse. No one but Dr. Grogan knew a word of French. No one but myself. I know my folly, my blindness. How I wished for my better self to be blind. Once you begin by deceiving, and we were both guilty. Once that path is taken, it is impossible to turn back.
But how were you deceiving him?
Not him. I was deceiving myself, which is just as bad, if not worse.
I see. I agree. All deception is a web which entangles.
Once we set out to deceive, Mr. Smith.
So, deceived, you went to Weymouth.
I found him at the inn he spoke of. It was not a respectable place. I hardly dared enter. He seemed overjoyed to see me. He was all a lover should be, on the surface. But he changed. I cannot tell you how, but I knew. He was an actor playing his part.
And was he still a gentleman?
No. He fitted his surrounding. A common man in a common inn. I saw him for what he was, and I should have left at once. Why did I not? Perhaps I believed I was in charge of my destiny. Had I not run away to this man? So, I ate the food he had prepared for me. I drank the wine he pressed on me. It did not intoxicate me. I think it made me see more clearly. Is that possible?
Under some circumstances, I believe it is.
He made his intentions quite clear, and I could not pretend a surprise. My innocence was false from the moment I chose to stay. I gave myself to him.
To tell me must take courage. You are brave.
Am I? Mr. Smithson,
I beg you to understand why I did this shameful act. I did it so I should never be the same again. I could never marry that man, so I married shame. It was a kind of suicide, an act of despair. I had set myself beyond the pale. I am nothing but the French lieutenant's poor.
Charles went quietly to where he could see the profile of that face. He saw the cheeks were wet, and he felt unbearably touched, disturbed by a maze of cross-currents which swept him hopelessly away from his safe judicial anchorage. Deep in himself, he forgave her unchastity and glimpsed the dark shadows where he might have enjoyed her himself. He stood and stared down at her for a few hurtling moments, then turned and resumed his place as if he had just stepped back from the brink of the bluff.
May I finish?
If it does not cause you more distress.
He left the next day, and I returned to Lyme. We did not say goodbye. I told my employer, Mrs. Talbot, he would return to marry me, but she understood the truth.
When did you learn that he was married?
A month later. He made himself out an unhappy husband and spoke of love and of an arrangement. I replied that I wished never to see him again.
You have concealed this from everyone but myself?
Yes. It has been my secret.
I think it is obvious, is it not? You must leave here.
Know the truth. Can you still say leave Lyme?
Most certainly.
Then you forgive me what I have done. Forgive me my sin.
My forgiveness? Who am I to forgive you?
Please.
All right. As I am convinced you have done sufficient penance, you are forgiven.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. But I have no...
Do not worry about the practical considerations. I will deal with them.
I do not deserve such kindness.
I cannot think of money better spent. Now you have shared your secret. You have nothing to fear from life.
Nothing. I hope so.
And now, had we better not make our way back? You will have to set me on the path, I think.
I know the way well. Please follow me. The path is down there, through the trees, by the...
Listen.
Stay where you are, Mr. Smith, and I will see who it is.
You never did. You were making it up.
I'm not Sam Farrow, it be true.
It can't be.
They're coming this way. You know who they are?
Yes, I know who they are.
They won't see us here, but we must remain still.
Here. Let's have a sit here, Mary. The grass is beautiful, soft and nice.
Oh, so you would say. Oh, can I trust you, though?
Yes, you can.
Oh, Sam.
Mary.
This is most embarrassing. It would happen.
They are so in love, Mr. Smithson. So in love.
Mary.
So it seems.
See? Mm. He kisses her eyes once, twice.
You can watch and smile.
Because it is so beautiful. Mm.
I do love you, Mary.
I love you, Sam.
Oh.
Charles knew that if he reached out his arms, he too would meet with no resistance. Only a passionate reciprocity of feeling. He stood with one foot over the precipice when Mary saved him. Suddenly, she pushed Sam aside and laughing ran down the slope towards the path. Sam ran after her. Their running figures disappeared.
Why?
Why?
We must never meet alone again.
No. It is better we do not.
You had better go first, Miss Woodruff. I'll wait here for half an hour.
You have been most kind, Mr. Smith.
Oh, never again. Never, no more. You've been playing with fire, my boy. You all but took her. Now you must remove yourself from the flames. You've cured her of her madness. There's no sign of her. She's vanished into the wood of Ware Commons. Like any wood nymph. She is a most baffling young woman. Most unpredictable young woman. Her emotions seem to fight within her. Is her story of the Frenchman entirely true? She is quite an actress and can change her mood at the snap of the fingers. But she must be a woman of the past for me, without let or hindrance. My free will demands it.
It's just come, Mr. Charles. Telegram.
So I see.
Well, I didn't know where he was, sir, so I couldn't...
Oh, of course. Ah. That is most opportune.
Not bad news then, sir.
No, Sam, urgent news. I have to leave as soon as possible.
Where for, sir, if I may ask?
Winsiat, to my uncle, Sir Robert. Find out when the first train from Exeter to Salisbury leaves in the morning, will you?
Sir, and I'll order you a trap to take you to Exeter, sir.
Good man. You can stay here. I must let Miss Ernestina know, so bring the train times to Miss Tranter's, like a good fellow.
Will do, sir.
Oh, dear. How long do you expect to be away, Charles?
As short a time as possible, dearest.
Why does he want to see you so urgently? Perhaps he's ill.
Well, I doubt that. Uncle Robert has always wanted things to happen immediately, Tina, once he's made up his mind.
How thoroughly selfish. And what has he made his mind up about, do you think?
As a guest, dearest, I would say it is about which place at Winsiat we would prefer, and he wants to know it at once.
The manor house or the great house itself?
Or there's the little house in the village, which is not at all little.
And it has dozens of very small Tudor rooms, only fit for dwarves.
I think he may offer us the great house and go and live in the manor house himself.
The great house needs new decorations.
You may raise it to the ground and erect a second Crystal Palace, for all I care.
Charles, do be serious.
I am.
I am your serious sweetheart.
Oh, do hurry back. It's so dull here without you.
Dearest Tina.
So Charles escapes for the moment, as happy as a schoolboy, unaware that if he had walked on through Ware Commons that afternoon at a quicker pace, he might have seen Mrs. Fairley at the dairy farm. Sarah certainly did. But by the time Charles had carefully skirted the farm, Mrs. Fairley was on her way back to Marlborough House with her news.
You wish to speak to me, Mum? Mrs. Pulteney? Mrs. Fairley told me you wished to speak to me.
On the table are a month's wages. You will take them in lieu of notice. You will depart this house at your earliest convenience in the morning. You hear me, miss? Take your wages!
I am not to be told why I am dismissed.
Do you dare to be so impertinent?
Yes. It is surely a Christian thing to do, to tell me why I am dismissed.
I shall see that you are locked away.
For walking Ware Commons, I doubt it.
How dare you! You're a public scandal, miss.
Am I? For standing on the cob, for walking Ware Commons?
I command you to leave this room at once.
Very well. And since all I have ever experienced in it is hypocrisy, I shall do so with the greatest pleasure. Good evening.
Stop! You have not taken your wages. Take them.
You may keep them. And if it is possible with so small a sum, I suggest you purchase an instrument of torture.
What?
I am sure Mrs. Fairley will help you to use it upon all those wretched enough to come under your power.
You shall answer for that.
Before God, do you mean?
Yes, before God.
Are you so sure you will have his ear in the world to come? Are you not a great sinner, Mrs. Pulteney?
Oh, leave my shut. I will have you.
You cannot harm me, Mrs. Pulteney.
Oh, Mrs. Fairley! Mrs. Fairley!
Well, she will be at hand, I am sure.
What is it, Mom? What have you done, you Jezebel?
I think your mistress is about to faint.
You've murdered her.
No, I'm afraid she will recover.
Oh, you wicked Jezebel, my poor mistress.
Thank God I shall never see either of you again.
I will get Dr. Brogan, Mom. Yes, yes. Get the doctor.
Oh, Charles, it's not possible.
Charles, back so soon? You only left yesterday. Oh, Ernestina.
My uncle's business was quickly finished, Aunt Trent.
Are you upset, Ernestina?
Charles has been disinherited.
Disinherited? How is this, Charles?
Tina has exaggerated. It is simply that my uncle has decided to marry.
After a lifetime as a bachelor.
And if he should be so fortunate as to have a son.
Fortunate, you call it?
Then the baronetcy would be that son's, not mine.
Is the lady involved young enough to bear children?
Yes, indeed. And she has by a previous marriage.
Oh, it's monstrous, aunt. Has he lost his senses, Charles?
I do not think so, dearest, but he has lost his heart.
It's my fault. I know he disapproves of me.
Oh, come now, this is nonsense. If he disapproves of anyone, it is me. I have paid him too little attention for years.
He said how fond of you he was. The truth is, for him, I'm a draper's daughter, a tradesman's girl.
Please, Ernestina, contain yourself.
But, Charles, is not Sir Robert too old to have children?
He is 67, which is not too old, I believe.
No, it is not.
And she's young enough to be his granddaughter.
My dear Ernestina, please, in such circumstances, all one has is one's dignity.
I know, but I'm so angry for you.
Let me be angry for myself. And what great happenings have taken place in Lyme these last 24 hours?
There has been a happening, has there not, Aunt?
Well, there has been, but surely Charles will hardly find it earth-shaking.
But what is this happening, earth-shaking or not?
Mrs. Pulteney has dismissed Miss Woodruff.
When was this?
Oh, last evening. Her box was taken by a porter early this morning to the White Lion.
My hotel?
It is the depot for coaches. But Miss Woodruff herself has not been seen since she left Marlborough House at dawn.
Why was she dismissed? You know, Aunt Tranter.
Rumour has it for walking on Ware Common.
It seems, Charles, that Mrs. Pulteney was left in a state of collapse after dismissing her. I wonder what happened. Miss Woodruff seems such a meek creature. Perhaps she went mad and attacked Mrs. Pulteney.
Has she not been seen since dawn?
No. The whole town is humming with the news.
Could she have taken her own life?
Oh, some fear so. Dr. Grogan is worried. But search parties have found nothing.
What is this, sir?
It's addressed to you, Mr. Charles. Sorry, it came this morning just as I was getting up.
Who brought it, did you see?
Some boy, sir. Didn't know him.
Well, I'll read it in good time.
Right, sir.
Tell them to send me up some supper, will you? Anything they have ready.
Right away, Mr. Charles. Two shakes of the donkey's tail.
I beg you to see me one last time. I will wait this afternoon and tomorrow morning. If you do not come, I shall never trouble you again. See her. I need advice.
Sorry to trouble you, sir, but the same boy what came this morning has just come again with this note, sir. It won't seal or nothing, sir.
So I see. Je vous prie, je passerai la nuit. Je serai de l'aube après la ferme.
I'll go and fetch us up, sir. It will ready.
Sam, a moment.
Mr. Charles?
I have interested myself in an unfortunate woman's case here in Lyme, Sam. You may well know whom I mean.
Yeah, I think so, sir. I've heard a lot about her, sir.
The whole of Lyme knows about her, I imagine. But, Sam, I wish to keep the matter to myself for the moment. Do you understand?
Perfectly, Mr. Charles.
I hope to establish the person in a situation more suited to her abilities. So you will speak of this to no one, right?
Of course not, Mr. Charles. My lips will be shut tight.
Thank you. And once I have eaten my supper, I shall visit Dr. Grogan. don't wait up for me.
Yes, sir. I'll see about your supper, sir.
Thank you. Well, it's simple French. I pray you, une femme on her knees asks you to help her in her angoisse, anguish. After dawn, I shall be at the little barn near the sea, reached by the first footpath to the left after the farm.
So, there it is.
I am in your hands.
Imagine, Smithson, if you can, I am a young woman of superior intelligence and some education. I think the world has done badly by me. So I am full of self-pity, not in full command of my emotions. And I have developed a very professional line in melancholy. I have tragic eyes. I weep easily. I can be silent, offhand, etc., etc. And now there enters a young god, handsome, educated, of the class I admire. I see that he is interested in me. And the sadder I seem, the more interested he appears to be.
Continue.
He treats me like a lady, and he offers to help me escape from my unhappy lot. I have fed him my past, in a version, the French lieutenant, the pity of it, etc., etc., and this he has devoured. So I must make him pity my present. One day, when I was out walking where I have been forbidden to walk, I seize my chance. I show myself to someone I know will report my crime. I get myself dismissed from my post, and I disappear at dawn, knowing it will be presumed that I will throw myself off the nearest cliff. Then I cry to my savior for help. Now, how does that strike you?
You mean that she invited her dismissal?
From what I heard today, she walked flagrantly out of Ware Common Woods into Mrs. Fairley's sight.
In other words, I have been led by the nose.
Yes, I think you have. But it required a generous nose.
Oh, what do you suppose her final intention to be?
I doubt if she knows. She lives from day to day. But perhaps she had her dreams, which included you.
But she cannot have seriously supposed that I...
A man betrothed? Perhaps she knows that you are already half in love with her.
No, I cannot permit that. You're wrong, wrong.
Am I? Look into your heart, Smithson. Know thyself.
I am an enigma to myself, Grogan. I do not love her, but I feel like a man possessed, a man going against all that is best in his character. As I sit here now, her face rises before me. There is something in her, something about her, which is so different. I cannot explain.
I think you had better leave matters in my hands. And you must go away, Smith.
Well, it so happens I have business in London. What will you do?
Would you be prepared for a certain amount of expense?
Of course. Somewhere...
A private asylum in Exeter. I know it well.
We are not talking of committal.
No, not at all. This is a place where our spiritual wounds can heal.
I feel that you have saved my life.
Nonsense, my dear fellow. No, take yourself back to the White Lion and sleep the sleep of the righteous. Tomorrow, leave for London on urgent business.
Ten to four. Clear sky. Chill. Oh, where is she? A mile or two away in some dank woodland darkness.
So Charles did not sleep the sleep of the righteous. In fact, he had never felt less sleepy. The effects of Grogan's brandy had long worn off, leaving him with a profound sense of guilt. He had lost all his self-respect, and more, he had lost respect for everything he knew. Life was a pit in pain.
Why did I allow Grogan to judge her for me? Because I was more concerned to save appearances than save my own soul. How can I allow her to be crucified in an asylum? It will be dawn shortly. I must find her first, before Grogan and the asylum party track her down.
The sun was just redly leaving the dove-grey waves of the hills behind Chesil Bank when Charles went from the hotel. Walking fast, he left the town behind him and entered the lane to the undercliff. The trees were dense with singing birds. A tiny wren perched on top of a bramble not 10 feet from him and trilled its violent song. He came to where the path forked and took the left branch. The sea came closer below him, a milky blue and infinitely calm. Soon he saw the mossy, derelict thatch of the barn. He went down towards it, rather like a man going into an unknown jungle. He pushed the broken-down door open and went inside. In the farthest stall, he found her sleeping, curled up like a small girl under her old coat.
Miss Woodruff.
Yes?
It is I, Charles Smithson.
Oh, you have come. Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, it is a beautiful morning.
Coming here was like a walk through the Paradise Garden. I was away all yesterday. A search party was looking for you. There was a great concern for your safety.
I did not mean to cause such trouble.
Then another will be out looking for you this morning.
So you've not told anyone?
One thing is clear. You must now go from Lyme.
Yes, that is clear. I prayed for you to find me.
And I have, and I will help you leave.
I thought perhaps you would turn your back on me.
I gave you my word.
You must know how I feel, what I feel for you.
No, no, your feelings must not come into it. Please, Miss Woodruff, you must control your feelings.
I cannot, cannot. Give me your hand.
No, stay, please. Please, this is foolishness. Don't you see?
I made sure Mrs. Fairley would see me leaving the Commons.
Yes, I'm sure you did. But why did you?
Why? Look at me. Do you not see why?
This is not possible.
Do you believe that? Do you?
Sarah.
This moment.
Yes.
No.
Oh, Sarah.
Yes.
Sarah.
He took her into his arms, saw her eyes close as she swayed into his embrace, then closed his own and found her lips. The moment overcame the age. I must freeze them in time in that embrace and go back a short while to the White Lion, where, as Sam was having his breakfast, the Boots greeted him with the news that his master had gone out and Sam was to pack and strap and be ready to leave at noon. Packing and strapping was but half an hour's work, and Sam had more pressing business.
Got till 10, have you, love?
When Miss Tina gets up. Why are we going on where I come, Sam?
Look, I'll tell you in a moment. So you heard Miss Tina say that Mr. Charles had been disinherited?
I did. After he got back yesterday evening.
So that's it. And he's got himself involved with another woman. The one what's gone missing.
Her? The French lieutenant's woman?
Yes, her. Message came from her yesterday, I swear. And I know he's gone to her. Down to the undercliff, where we're going.
But where in the undercliff then, Sam?
Well, if she's been out all night, the old barn, of course.
Our old barn? Where we goes?
Yeah, the same.
Oh, if Miss Tina gets
yeah,
a whisper.
Exactly. So he may be willing to give me a loan, like, so we keep mum. Oh. Help set us up. Think of that haberdasher's shop, Mary, love.
Oh. Time had stopped, it seemed. Charles felt the softness of her lips, the whole close substance of her body, her sudden smallness. Then he sensed, more than heard, the arrival on the scene of someone else. Dr. Grogan, was it? He pushed her violently away with an agonized look, as if he was the most debased criminal caught in the most abominable act. He turned and rushed out through the door.
What the devil are you doing here, Sam?
Me and Mary's out walking, Mr. Charles.
I thought I left instructions to pack.
I've done it, sir.
We were just having a walk before you goes off, sir, and Miss Tina gets up.
Kindly leave us alone a moment, Mary.
Yes, sir.
Go on, go.
I have come here on that business I mentioned, Sam, at the request of the physician who is treating her, you understand. So nothing must be disclosed. Nothing.
Yes, Mr. Charles.
And you will ask Mary not to say a word?
No, Mary won't say a thing, sir, on my life.
Thank you. And you will take this?
No, Mr. Charles, never.
I will make it up to you later, but not a word.
I must not miss over, sir.
Good. Now take her back to Lyme.
Oh, something you ought to know, sir.
Yes.
As we was leaving, a party of men was being got together to do a search, we heard said. I'll be off, sir. Come on, girl. Back to Lyme.
Miss Woodruff, they have gone.
Your man mentioned a search party.
Yes, we do not have much time. Miss Woodruff, you must forgive me. The last thing I wished was to engage your affections.
Was it, Mr. Smithson?
Business calls me to London. I do not know for how long. I think you should go to Exeter. Look for a position there. I beg you, take the money in this purse, and if you should need further assistance...
I shall never see you again.
You cannot expect me to deny that.
I cannot. No. Though seeing you is all I live for.
No, you must not think of that.
Do not fear. If I had wished to kill myself, I have had reason enough before now. I accept your loan with gratitude.
It is better you do not return to Lyme now.
Search party, of course.
There is talk of committing you to an institution.
For my own good, I am sure. I will walk to Axmouth Cross with a coach to Exeter. My box.
I will see that it is sent to the Exeter depot. You are a very remarkable person, Miss Woodruff.
Yes. I am a remarkable person.
She had lowered her head. Now she raised her face to his, with an imperceptible yet searching movement of her eyes, as if there was something he must see. A truth beyond his truth. A history behind all his conceptions of history. Worlds he could not apprehend.
This is most surprising, Charles, most surprising.
I need hardly add, Mr. Freeman, that my uncle's decision comes as a great surprise to myself as well.
Ah. And Ernestina, she knows?
She was the first I told, and I bear a letter to you from her.
Ah, thank you. You still have a very fair private income, have you not?
I cannot pretend to have been left a pauper.
And there is the possibility that your uncle may not be fortunate. He's not a young man.
He is 67. She is not yet 40.
I think. It could happen. I'd better read my daughter's letter. Pray excuse me.
This interview was taking place in Mr. Freeman's study on the day following Charles finding Sarah in the old barn. Leaving Ernestina's father to read his daughter's letter, Charles went to the window and stared out at the trees of Hyde Park.
Perhaps I should read you what she says as a postscript. If you listen to Charles's nonsense, I shall make him elope with me to Paris. It seems we are given no alternative.
But if you should wish for further time to reflect...
No. You make my daughter happy, let us say no more on the subject. The park is looking very green. All the trees are out. I count myself a fortunate man in every respect... Except one. I have no son.
But you will have a son-in-law, sir.
That's true. What I suspect my son-in-law to be would find commerce abhorrent to him, and not a gentleman's occupation. Am I correct?
It is not abhorrent to me. I am ignorant of it, that is all. And as for the rest, that is mere cant, sir. You are yourself a living proof that it is so.
But would you like it to be said of you that you were in trade?
The possibility has never arisen.
But what if it should arise?
I'm afraid I don't see how... You mean that I might... I could... You've taken me aback, Mr. Freeman.
As I expected to. Next year we shall open Emporia in Bristol and Birmingham. We are prospering, Charles.
Yes, indeed.
When it seemed that your future duties lay in the administration of your uncle's estate, I said nothing. But think, You have energy, education, great ability. What might you do with those qualities?
Well, as I said, my ignorance of trade, commerce, is almost total.
I suggest nothing immediately, of course. And I am suggesting no more than a partnership. In practical terms, nothing more onerous to begin with than an occasional visit to the office of management.
Well, that sounds compliant with my small talents and my general ignorance.
You do yourself no justice, Charles. This is a great age of progress, and progress is a lively horse. Either one rides it, or it rides one. You may, of course, say that progress is not your concern, but I think you should ask yourself whether it ought to concern you.
What are we faced with in the 19th century? An age where woman was sacred, and where you could buy a 13-year-old girl for a few pounds. Where more churches were built than in the whole previous history of the country, and where one in six houses in central London was a brothel. It is said that the Victorians poured their libidos into other things than sex, but they were as highly sexed as we are, in spite of the fact that they had religion thrown at them day and night, while we are immersed in sexual images. We should remember this as Charles makes his way aimlessly through London's West End.
How I hate the human race. Sometimes. Trade. Commerce. I'll be damned first. I'll not play the shopkeeper for you, Freeman. Never. But, of course, am I not the bought husband? And does not the money to buy me come from trade? From the emporia, as he termed it. Where the devil have I got to? I've been walking without the first idea. This is Oxford Street. Damn it, I've lost all sense of direction. What is that place over there? Light it up no end. Good God, it's Freeman's shop. The Emporia. I don't believe I've seen it before. And it is open for business. 6:30? When do they shut, if ever? Oh, it all goes towards Tina's dowry, except that, Smithson. Did I ever believe it existed in reality? But by God, it is real. A white ticket on everything in the vast windows giving the price. The price. My price also. The source of the wealth I am to be entrapped by. Accept it. Oh, I need to get drunk. I need a woman. A last debauch.
Leave me charges a sovereign for all night.
Oh, a sovereign. Right. Here.
Thank you, sir.
Tell me. Have you been longer?
Since I was 18. 2 years come May.
It's almost May now. 2 years.
I only go with gentlemen, sir. You don't need no worries like that.
No. Thank you.
If you make yourself at home, I shan't be a minute.
Yes.
Shush now. Go back to sleep now.
A child. They do cry.
It's my little girl, sir. She won't be any trouble.
And the father?
He's a soldier, sir. Out in India now.
In India? Would he not marry you?
He gave me money for when I was brought to bed.
And could you not find any other means of livelihood?
Once you've been done wrong to, can't be mended. So you have to make out best you can.
Yes, I suppose you do.
So, shall I take my clothes off?
Yes, please do.
And you take off yours.
Yes, of course.
Well, you're a very handsome gentleman.
And you are a very pretty girl.
Do
Do you like us wicked girls?
Yes, I do like you wicked girls.
Shall I sit on your knees first?
I would prefer to stretch out.
And you can. It's a soft, nice bed. Come on. Come next to me.
Oh. Oh, that's better.
Nice being laid down. Am I all right?
Yes. It's very nice.
I hope I make you feel better.
Yes. Yes, a lot better.
Oh. Well, come on then. Let's see what we can get up to.
Oh, I would say so. I say, I don't know your name.
My name usually don't matter. But it's Sarah. And Sarah will do just what you want.
Sarah? Sarah? Oh, Lord. Sorry, I'm going to be sick. Sorry. What? Oh, Lord, what a wailing. Oh, I feel awful. Sober, but frightful. Oh, how long will she be? Oh, do be quiet, please. Oh, finding a cab at this time of night may take hours. Yes, yes, oh, Lord, one last debauch. Oh, this can't go on. Better go into her. Try to stop her.
Stop that kid, I'll tell you!
Hush. Hush, hush now. For your mother will soon return. Oh, hush, hush, please. Perhaps if I pick you up. If I can. Oh, nasty man. Now you sit on my lap.
That's it. Here, see? This is called a watch. Pretty, isn't it? And it goes back and forth on its chain, see? Back and fro, back and fro.
Well, and what about that? Oh, you want to hold it?
You shall.
There, then. Well, if the fellows in my club could see me now. If Ernestina could see me now. Or Mr. Freeman. Sarah Woodruff would only smile, I'm sure, as she did when she saw Sam kissing Mary's eyes. Yes, what a debauch it has been, little girl. Yes. Ah. Oh. Hey, you are back to sleep.
Oh, sir, there you are.
She is asleep again. Let me loosen my watch from her tiny hand.
She was crying, was she?
Yes, and a neighbour complained.
Let me take her. I had to go down to the Warren Street stand. It's outside.
I have caused you no end of trouble. Let me repay you.
5 sovereigns? Oh, sir, thank you. Thank you.
You are a brave, kind girl, Sarah.
Charles woke next morning in a better frame of mind than he expected. He gave his hangover its due and stared awfully at his haggard face and peered into his parched and arid mouth, and then decided he was well able to face the world.
Good morning, Mr. Charles. I brought you a pot of tea. Thought you might be thirsty.
I am. I have the devil's own thirst.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised, if you don't mind me saying so, sir.
I do not. I was probably rude to you. I apologise.
Apology accepted, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, and there's a letter for you, sir. Sent on from the White Lion.
Oh, thank you. More tea, sir. That's nothing of importance. Throw it away, will you?
Here we are, sir.
Right, I have done my business here, Sam. We return to Lyme tomorrow morning, the 10 o'clock train. You will see to the tickets. And I'll give you 2 messages for the telegraph office if you hand me that pad and pencil on my desk like a good fellow.
Here we are, sir.
Thank you. Then you may have the afternoon off to choose some ribbons for the Fair Mary. That is, if you haven't disposed of your heart elsewhere since our return.
Mr. Charles, I'm going to ask for her hand.
Are you indeed?
Yeah, and if we were married, I'd have to live out, sir.
Yes, but you're not going to forsake me so soon before my marriage.
No, sir, I was thinking of afterwards.
Well, I'm sure my wife would be happy with Mary, so what's the trouble?
When you're settled, Mr. Charles, I was thinking of going into business.
Business?
Hmm.
What business?
Well, I've sort of set me out on having a little shop, sir.
A shop? And what type of shop?
Drapers and haberdashers, sir.
Well, to start up with, you'll need some of the ready, Sam.
Well, I've put by £30, and then I'll have to have a loan.
But wait until I am married, Sam. Then circumstances will be easier. And, Sam, don't get ideas above your station. They only cause unhappiness. Right, now, send these messages, will you? Get the rail tickets for the 10 o'clock to Exeter.
Once downstairs, Sam read the messages. One was to the White Lion, informing them of their return, and the other was to Ernestina, and said, "My immediate return has been commanded, and will be most happily obeyed by your most affectionate Charles Smithson." This was not the first private correspondence which had been under Sam's eyes that morning. The letter sent on from Lyme and postmarked Exeter was not sealed, and a little steam from a kettle does wonders. It contained only an address, Endicott's Family Hotel. But it led Sam to a dilemma.
He must marry Miss Tina. She's already more than him. I need 2.5 monkeys. And if he goes on spooning with that wicked creature from Lyme, things would come to a pretty pass, and he could say goodbye to his marriage prospects. The more guilty he is, the better. But he has to marry Miss Tina. Oh, it's a dilemma, all right.
Charles thought he had a first-class carriage to himself on the 10 o'clock to Exeter. But just before they pulled out, he was joined by a man of 40 or so. There was something rather aggressively secure about him as he sat with his top hat firmly square, his hands on his knees. And he did not speak for an hour or so. How long before we reach Exeter, sir?
Let me see. Almost 2 hours if on time.
Thank you. Then you are going straight on to Lyme, I believe.
How the deuce do you know that, sir?
I overheard you telling your manservant to procure a four-wheeler for the journey.
Did you?
I myself will be staying in Exeter for the night. I have some business to attend to.
Have you?
I stay at Endicott's Family Hotel, if you know it.
No, I don't.
It is not smart, of course, but comfortable.
I use the ship as staying.
The ship? Ah, yes.
I shall get some sleep. Excuse me.
By all means, sir.
Give me, dearest. I forgot to buy flowers in Exeter.
So I see, sir.
I was in such haste to be here before you went to bed.
Oh, Charles, I haven't slept a minute since you went away.
I can see that by your pallid cheeks and swollen eyes.
Now you make fun of me.
Well, I must say, Tina, if this is what insomnia does to you, I shall have an alarm bell to ring in our bedroom.
Oh, Charles, you make me blush. Mm.
What is this you're embroidering?
It's a watch pocket, of course.
Let me see. Our initials, C and E. And the verse? Each time thy watch thou wind. How the deuce does that finish?
You must guess.
Oh, I know. Thy wife her teeth will grind.
Oh, now I shan't tell you. You are wicked awful.
And you are adorable when you're angry.
It goes like this. Each time thy watch thou wind, of love may I thee remind.
Oh, my sweetest, I wish tomorrow were our wedding day.
Oh, Charles, dear one.
Oh, dearest. I have a small confession to make.
It concerns that sad female at Marlborough House.
Oh, not poor tragedy. Really, do tell me.
It really is most stupid and trivial. During one of my little pursuits of the elusive Echinoderm...
Ah, you have woken, sir.
What? Yes, just about.
You were sound away, sir. And at a guess, I would say, enjoying a pleasant dream.
Pleasant? The deuce it was. Yes. And that was the trouble.
I take it you mean you did not wish for such a dream.
No, I did not. It makes it harder to face reality.
It will vanish, sir. Even our most vivid dreams vanish.
It has left me already. Are we on time, I wonder? 2 minutes late.
Exeter, St. David! Exeter!
I wonder what awaits us in Exeter.
In episode 2 of The French Lieutenant's Woman, Norman Rodway was the writer, with Amanda Redman as Sarah Woodruff and David Threlfall as Charles Smithson. Margaret Courtney played Mrs. Pulteney, Teresa Gallagher, Ernestina, Jason Fleming, Sam, and Jill Graham, Aunt Tranter. The prostitute was Tilly Vosborough, Dr. Grogan, Steve Hodson, Mr. Freeman, John Badley, Mary Una Beeson, and Mrs. Fairley, Jilly Mears. The director was Janet Whittaker.